The Guardian.
Before you get started with this edition of Football Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas trees, games in hand, red faces and even some antlers, thanks to events in Japan. Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Man City win the We're Too Clever to Tackle derby at the Etihad, but does it matter? Because Chelsea are busy heading over the horizon with 11 straight wins and more clean sheets than David David's big file of Brexit plans. With Man U on the march once more, signs of life at Leicester, Messi's dribble, Bayern Leipzig, Mertens, post and more, it all adds up to a very bumper Football Weekly. Yeah, well, we're staying awake all the way in today's pod. Some pretty special stuff coming up in part three. Pretty special stuff at the start, because I say it's the most wonderful time of the year. We've only got Barney Rone here. Hey, Barney.
Hi, James.
All right. Good to see you back.
Sorry, I'm a little bit under the weather today. I'm pumping germs down through the digital airwaves all our readers.
Yeah. Barney Rone germs, though. Hey, Paolo Bandini.
Hey.
That's enthusiastic. And Barry Glendening.
Hello.
All right. I'm playing the part of James Richardson today. Marge Simpson. Anyway, it's good that you're here, Barney, for any number of reasons, but principally you were at the Etihad for Man City Arsenal.
Yeah, it was a really good game. I really enjoyed it, even though it was one of those sort of rewrite jobs, because at halftime it looked like a disappointing, limp City, you know, yet again in crisis. And by the end, it was disappointing, limp Arsenal yet again.
Right. Had you failed to prepare at the disappointing, limp Arsenal?
I couldn't see it coming.
You didn't have one you could just cut and paste across?
And I was confused by the whole thing. It was, who's going to be Arsenal here? And Arsenal were Arsenal in the end.
Right, okay. What happened then? What was the turning point?
The turning point was, you mentioned the tackling thing.
Hmm.
I thought the tackling thing was really blown out of proportion last week. I mean, I was there in the room when he said, I don't do tackles.
Right.
And it has to be said that was part of it. He goes on these weird, quite long rants, like I'm doing now, when you ask him a question and he's not happy. And he mumbles and he talks and talks and talks. And in the middle of that somewhere, he said, oh, tackles, tackles, what are tackles? And that was picked out as though he'd stood up and said, ripped his shirt off and said, I am not going to, you know, it wasn't quite like that. And he's right. Why would he be coaching tackles exactly?
Well, you wrote a piece about this, which I happened to read, which you pointed out that Barcelona team of his in 2010-11 actually finished 19th out of 20 in La Liga for tackling, and they seemed to do okay.
I mean, Xavi was one of the lowest tacklers in the league that year and the best player in the world.
Right.
I mean, tackles, what is a tackle anyway? It's sort of getting in someone's way, isn't it? I mean, that Barcelona team absolutely destroyed their opponents by the end of 90 minutes. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make was he kept going about second balls as well. And I think everyone assumed he was taking the piss out of English football. Second ball, you. But actually, he revealed afterwards he'd been coaching on how to get second balls all week. That's what they've been working on. Tenacity and winning those loose balls. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is he actually did something in that game. He changed it at half time. He put what he called two number 10s in. He moved Sané and De Bruyne to number 10, shoved David Silva in behind. And for 10 minutes after half-time, they're absolutely brilliant. I thought Silva was just terrifying. He was everywhere. Passing was brilliant. And Arsenal were like a limp lettuce leaf. They just did not react. You know, it was a team doing the same things. Yeah. And he's going on about managers too much. But he actually did change that game.
Some people write entire books about him. Fantastic. Kind of ball over the top for the opening goal, which may or may not have been offside. Was it offside, Paolo?
For City's opening goal. City's opening goal. Yeah, I believe it was offside. Right. He looked quite obvious. I mean, not as in obviously to a linesman making a decision in real time, but on a replay when you got a still of the image in line, I thought it was quite obviously offside.
But it's in that category of goals that are so good that to say, yeah, but they're offside, is kind of quibbling.
But you know, do you not feel there's nothing more boring than seeing one team do something where they actually take control of the game, they deserve to win, and then talking about it being offside? I mean, that goal was morally onside.
Well, that's the category I'm talking about.
The goal was coming, they were playing better than Arsenal, they took the game to them. Sané's athleticism to twist and finish was fantastic. I mean, he's a hell of a mover, that guy. Yeah. He's brilliant.
Yeah, well, the referees...
I like referees. Moral offside.
Well, you can't say they didn't deserve to score.
Did you like the phrase, refs are protected like lions in the zoo? What did he mean by that?
I think it was a pretty feeble attempt to deflect the blame for this latest capitulation away from his players and onto the referee, which is quite disrespectful because I don't think the referee did anything wrong.
You say latest capitulation because it was the second time in a week that Arsenal had taken the lead only to then lose. But Paolo, it's not that disastrous going to Man City and losing 2-1, is it?
Well, it all depends what your expectations for the season are. I think if you were caught up in the hype of a couple of weeks ago when Arsenal were on for the title because they were briefly top of the table. Indeed, they've gone in the space of about a week from being top of the table, albeit over only overnight, to being 9 points off first place. So yeah, if you were convinced that they could,
that's impressive.
Actually, win the league title, then yeah, it might feel disastrous. Whether I don't think that I didn't have the impression that they could win the league title myself, so that doesn't feel as disastrous to me. But I know that some people did.
Right.
But I think if they'd gone and played very well and lost 2-1, that would be okay. But it's the manner of the performance that would give me concern as an Arsenal fan, and it's the manner of the performance that has everyone who isn't an Arsenal fan laughing at the Arsenal-esqueness of it all.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair, and I think there's a few different threads in there. The first of all is that actually they started as perfectly as you could start this game with a really good goal, and I think that's almost the most disappointing part of it, is you come to City and you start like that and you think there's an opportunity here. You put your foot on their throat and make it happen. Arsenal didn't do that, and it's something that has happened in other games this season. I think against Tottenham they took the lead and you saw them sit back and sit too deep and not try and force their advantage in a big game. And I think even it's happened a few times, frankly, with Arsenal, but that's the situation. The other thing that I just wanted to come off the back of what Barney had said before, because he was talking about the changes that Guardiola makes, I think that this is one of the things that we really can point at Wenger and say he does not change his formations and adapt to things in game. Like he sets up a certain way, and the only way you ever see him really adapt is when he gets panicked at the end of a game and he throws an extra forward on or an extra defender in a really obvious way. He never makes these sort of subtle, okay, my starting shape, this 4-2-3-1 that is the base, he never thinks, well, that's not quite working, so I'm going to shift it and do something different. It's always the same. And so I think for an opposition manager as smart as Guardiola is with this stuff, it's probably quite easy to go, all right, I'm going to come up with a counterpoint.
Does he never change things?
I don't think he changes things in anything like the same. I can't say never change things, because sometimes, sure, he'll pull off midfield and set an extra attacker on, but it always feels like the same change at 70 like minutes for Bellerin. That sort of...
But even when a change was forced upon him, that, you know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had to go off, he brought on Mohamed Elneny, who's a defensive midfielder. Why would you do that? I just don't understand.
It was a strange moment. I mean, obviously Ox was injured and I don't think he had that many options, but the sight of Mohamed Elneny trying to force... I mean, if you've seen him play, he's like a rugby player. He can't pass forward. He was running forward, stopping, passing the ball backwards and trying to force the game at City through Mohamed Elneny. Something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reaction in the press box when Manchester City's players walked out wearing those Gundogan tributes? Did you all think he died?
Well, I was confused. Yeah, I thought it was a touching memorial. There's too much schmaltziness in football generally, isn't there? I mean, I've had an injury that bad, and it's not very nice. But
no one wore a t-shirt for you, Bernie, did they?
Well, they didn't actually.
If I'd known you were feeling poorly today, I'd have worn.
We could all have worn t-shirts.
Well, that would have made me feel much better.
Right,
particularly with that one with your new byline photograph in it.
Yeah, you know, that'd be great.
Get a T-shirt made out of that.
Why? I haven't seen this. What's on?
Barney has a new byline photo.
And
he's basically aged 20 years overnight on the Guardian.
Well, given my last photo, it was 16 years.
16, was it?
So, 26.
Mesut Ozil. We haven't heaped opprobrium on Mesut Ozil yet. Just days after that hapless performance against Everton.
Well,
what did he do in this game?
Well, I it's a difficult one, Ozil, because I get him. I understand the thing about Ozil.
All right. For anyone who doesn't, what is it?
Well, the thing is, you're not allowed to say that he doesn't get hold of games. And right. He's not Roy Keane. He's not that player.
He doesn't have to be Roy Keane. He could be, I mean, in this case, for example, David Silva or Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, but he's not that kind of player either. He's much more subtle.
Right.
He's the kind of... If the transfer market was actually a market,
yes,
you'd buy Ozil from some men with beards who'd made him in... You know, he's an artisan footballer.
Oh, right.
He's very... very special. And he does do some beautiful things, and he's a wonderful passer, a lovely subtle mover.
Yeah.
But he's got so few strings to his bow.
Right, and is he playing them less this year than last season? I mean, significantly less.
No, not really
the
on
numbers
the stats.
Say that he is.
Not really.
No?
No. I mean, yeah, maybe his assists have sort of dropped off a bit.
Yeah.
Ozil fans will say, look, he's not actually about that. He's not an assist machine. He's the player who helps make the space for the player who... But the fact is, I think his game is pairing itself back. There are a lot of things he doesn't do. And after a while, you start to think, well, is this sort of going anywhere, really?
Yeah.
He looks to me a bit like he's not improving.
He might be going somewhere, as you put it, because, of course, there's these big contract talks about him and Sanchez.
I can't see any guarantee, other than the market inflated elsewhere, any reason why you'd give him a pay rise.
Right.
What's he done to justify a pay rise?
I don't know. Maybe he'll go to China. What do you think Antonio Conte thinks about tackling, Paolo?
I think he's a fan.
Yep.
I think he's a fan of running, yep. And he's a fan of generally being the more aggressive team in just about every situation. I think his team's going to win the league.
It does look that way, doesn't it? 7 points clear of Man City, although, you know, still not quite halfway.
The season's very long. I'm not saying that in an entirely reactive, though, of course, a little bit reactive way. I'm saying it in part because I look ahead and think they're going to continue to not have the European games, which has been an advantage for them already and will continue to be an advantage for them. And I'm saying it a bit because this is the Conte we saw in his first year at Juventus, when his team wasn't necessarily the juggernaut that it is now, and that it was, you know, is flattening everyone in Italy much more easily. It was a team of players who were driven to relentless overachievement by a manager who does not let up. And I think he will not let up. And I think that for that reason, I believe that this team, with fewer fixtures than the other teams they're running against, has a good chance not to let up.
His start is the best ever by a new manager in the Premier League. Curiously, they put the graphic up and the top five were all Chelsea managers. So the best five starts ever by new managers in the Premier League all been by Chelsea managers. Although, to put that in perspective, Avram Grant was one of them. So it might be something about the club as much as the men that they bring in. But really impressive stuff once again at Crystal Palace, who didn't play that badly from what I saw, but just there was no way past the monolithic Chelsea rear guard.
It was quite comfortable 1-0 as 1-0s go. And Andros Townsend had a free kick towards the end that, you know, possibly could have saved a point. But, yeah, he kicked that ball very, very high.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's even come down yet.
One bad bit of news for Chelsea. Diego Costa's out. He finally picked up that fifth yellow. He will miss the big clash with Bournemouth, which is on what, Boxing Day?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, there's a talking point.
Yeah, it's probably a good game for him to miss.
Right.
But he has been absolutely brilliant this season. Mm. He's... all-round centre-forward, he's just fantastic. But I think they can probably get through that game without him, a little bit of a rest.
Right. OK. Batshuayi coming into the picture there. Palace now 1 point from the drop, and Chelsea are bags of points clear at the top, as we mentioned. We'll talk more about the situation at the bottom very shortly, but what was your reaction to these reports that Oscar's going to head off to the CSL, Chinese Super League, for very, very, very much money?
It's kind of sad that he's putting personal wealth ahead of his career, you know, when he would be making a lot of money wherever he plays. Mm. But obviously that kind of money, he's decided he can't turn it down. But the Chinese Super League is a joke, to be honest.
Well, it's a menace, according to Antonio Conte.
In what way?
Well, just that it's a threat to, you know, Europe's leagues. If basically the CSL can hoover up... I mean,
it's in its infancy, isn't it? And I presume the quality of play there will improve over time as better and better players go over there. But, you know, Daniel Taylor wrote an interesting column about this yesterday, in which he said that the state of the pitches there are appalling, everything is really badly run, referees are corrupt, the standard is...
See, Italy's really going to be under threat for this kind of thing.
The standard is considerably, several levels, he said, below MLS.
Right.
So, Yeah, for a player who's just should be approaching the peak of his career, to go over there just for money, it seems a bit sad, but
Alex,
you know,
Teixeira,
it's his call.
Javinho, Lavezzi, Dembaba, Papi Cisse, Jackson Martinez, Hulky, and Carlos Tevez apparently now is going to do that as well. Barney?
Well, there has been a lot of talk about China being a menace, and people do seem alarmed by that. I mean, I think that's, people often talk about China. I think it's slightly unfair. These players that you've mentioned are generally sitting around. I mean, Oscar has been a very disappointing player. A big fan of his. Jose Mourinho may well have been right about him. I mean, there was a lot of talk that Mourinho had sort of killed his desire, killed his career. But the guy's 25 and he's going to China. I mean, I think if you talk to people in Germany, they probably see the Premier League a bit like the way we see
China.
No, really. I mean, the amounts of money thrown at players here.
Right.
I mean, what do we really have a right to say that China is an evil, destructive force? I mean, they're providing competition. They're providing competition
in the Premier League is considerably higher than the standard in China, I believe. So, where most of the players at the moment are Chinese and are not very good at football. I mean, their FIFA ranking is really low.
Yeah. Well, there's only one way of changing that, isn't there? And believe me, China is massively committed to this. One of the reasons why Chinese have never been very good at football is because under the previous political regime, the gathering together in groups and clubs was forbidden.
Oh.
There is no culture of groups and clubs like we've had here since Victorian times, where our culture was to gather together, athletic excellence, that kind of thing. They don't have that structure. They want to have it now. It's a massive top-down initiative. It's not just a few random guys chucking money at Jackson Martinez.
Do top-down initiatives ever work in trying to inculcate football culture in countries?
I don't know, but a top-down initiative definitely stopped it from happening, and they've now released that verboten on having clubs. You know, that's not China anymore.
I don't
so
think
they're
the
trying
against,
to spark it from the top.
But I don't think it's a moral argument. I don't think Conte was making a kind of a moral distinction.
No,
between
I'm not
China
saying that
thing.
Was Conte's, but I've heard quite a lot. There was a long radio discussion last night about the, you know, how this is going to be a huge problem for our clubs and how we're going to cope with China, blah blah blah. But I mean, a lot of these are top ranked players who are sitting around not doing much. I mean, they may as well be cleared out, and maybe they'll play a few young players
I'd like
instead.
To see them at Stoke or Serie A or something, you know. So for me, it's
football
a shame.
Football is actually part of the national curriculum now in China.
In what way?
As in you. Kids have to play.
Oh, have to play it. Right, sorry.
We've seen what China done in Olympic sports. I mean, you know, they have massively improved their performance and given us pleasure. Obviously, we don't want to replicate all of those methods in football.
Well,
Over time, the Chinese Super League will probably become very good. But, you know, at the moment, it is in its infancy.
Well, I don't know that it ever will. I mean, I'm actually not sure that you can ever really try
and
if
they throw enough money at enough players, they'll get good players over.
It's not just that. They're going to produce their own players. Everyone in China is playing football now. But it's a massive initiative, and good luck to them.
Well, good luck to them, because I'm not sure if there's an example of a nation doing that where it's really, truly worked. I mean, America has had loads of stabs at it without it really producing.
What about the current world champions? Yeah, that's a pretty top-down system,
isn't it? I think if you're going to bring America into it, America's culture has shifted. That does not mean that they have the same football culture as X, Y, or Z country, but they have their own football culture now that has emerged in a different way in the last two decades. Maybe longer than that, but certainly there's been tangible shifts in the last couple of decades. So I don't, you know, and I think that the thing with China, I mean, look, it's the obvious thing. It's 1 billion people. You don't have to have everyone signs up to it. You only have to have a section of the population that gets sufficiently committed to it that it becomes something. I don't know that it'll become something bigger, but I'm sort of with Barney on this.
Quite exciting that Chelsea, having that win number 11 in a row, was a year to the day from when they were 7 points adrift off the bottom of the table or whatever it was, and fired Jose Mourinho. But of course, he's now bounced back himself, isn't he? There he is, marching on with another win for Man United, this time away at West Bromwich, which several foolish people like myself thought might actually be a tricky fixture for them, but it wasn't at all. Tony Pulis, I think, had one shot on target. We're very lucky, I would suggest, to finish the game with 11 players after Rondon. Somehow the referee managed to miss him slapping Marcos Rojo in the face. Not sure how that happened. But anyway.
Particularly as Phil Jones couldn't grass him up quick enough, screeching with horror. It looked like a Victorian woman you know, fainting when and it was a pretty harmless cough, but yeah, that's a red card offence. He was lucky not to go.
Well, he'd shoved Rojo once already, and then when that didn't do anything, he certainly he raised his hands. Now, Ibrahimovic, 10 goals in 9 now. Only Ruud van Nistelrooy has netted more goals in his first 16 Premier League games than Ibrahimovic. This is at Man United, by the way.
Yeah, he's fantastic, isn't he? I mean, I was ready to dismiss him as a fancy boy.
Right. What does this say about the Premier League?
Oh, no.
Because when we saw him in France, we were all going, yeah, but it's league.
No, it doesn't. It just says that he's a really good player. Yeah. I mean, he really... It was in the Champions League games against Premier League clubs in the last 3 years that I started to think, actually, he is really something. I mean, I'm very late to this. Lots of people already... But I was part of that kind of he's a ponytailed fancy boy set. Mm. But I've changed my mind on him. He's a magnificent specimen of a man and an extremely good footballer.
Yeah, armed and fully operational.
But he's turned down the opportunity to go to China. He hates the Chinese.
His time will come. He'll change his mind.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing. Paul McKinnon's flagging up the fact that he's a little bit dirty.
Ibra.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a pullback on McCauley for the first goal. He did take a little tug.
That's, I think, morally not, if you know, to borrow Barney's expression, morally not. And his shoulder barge, and who was it, Chris Brunt? Morally not a shoulder barge. That's just part, you know, if you love the game, you accept Ibra in all his incarnations. Yeah,
don't we like that when we're ready to say he's soft in France? He's, you know, he's come here and he's bullying people and shoving
them
around.
He's relishing the challenge. Great. Black belt and taekwondo, of course, is so infrequently mentioned. Yeah. Ooh, elsewhere in the Premier League, Spurs are just a point behind Arsenal. Paolo, it's happening again after they won at home to Burnley. Saints, are they in seventh place now? Groups for table.
Yep.
Saints are in seventh place. They won the big South Coast derby at the Vitality Stadium 3-1. How nice to see Jay Rodriguez in such fine fettle. Did you like his goals, Barney? Did you see these?
Yeah, second one was absolutely astonishing, wasn't it?
Right.
It was great.
I asked you, because you're in a bit of a Grinch-like mood today, because we were talking about Dries Mertens earlier.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come on to that later on. Anyway, this was a really special victory.
Apparently he scored a hat-trick.
He scored four, thank you.
Four goals.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Which your aunt could have scored, even though dead, by just being laid down in front of the goal mouth. These aren't cruel words from me. Barney Rennie's family. It was Barney that said that. Did it.
Yeah, I suggested she could have scored them despite,
you know, being inanimate.
Being dead. And yeah. When challenged on that.
Maybe she should go to the Chinese.
I don't want to sound disrespectful at this point.
No, but, yeah. You know, anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Jay Rodriguez, and this was important because goals had been a problem for Southampton. In fact, they scored as many goals in this game as they had in their last 7 Premier League matches combined. Wow. And Bournemouth, as we mentioned, are going to be... are they at Chelsea on Boxing Day or are they hosting Chelsea?
They're
on
Chelsea.
At Chelsea. Ooh. Right. Whereas Saints will be hosting Spurs on the 28th. Down at the bottom, problems for Swansea, although not quite as many problems as Hull have because they're bottom, but really unlucky away at West Ham. Sunderland got yet another win and Leicester showed yet more signs of life. That was a remarkable... match that one at the whatever it's called now, what used to be the Britannia. Half time, Stoke heading for their third win in 5. Leicester, rubbish on the road as usual, 2-0 down. Jamie Vardy's been sent off after one of Craig Pawson's kind of moments. And 5 more players have been given yellow cards. And Ranieri basically has to be restrained from getting to the referee.
Yes, by his own goalkeeper.
And then tactical whiz Ranieri throws on Ulloa. And Demarai Gray.
Great player, lovely player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great with the ball at his feet.
And you have this remarkable comeback with 10 men away at Stoke.
Well, they showed their champion spirit.
Yes, they did.
It's very stirring. Did you see the celebrations at the end in front of the fans?
I didn't. What happened?
Well, they kind of waggled their shirts and kissed the bat. Okay. But it was stirring.
Right.
It was a great success for the Hawkeye goal line system as well. Show a goal. Didn't think it was in when I saw it first, and then it was.
Yeah, the machines. Another job the machines have taken over.
What do you think about Kasper Schmeichel?
Well, how do you mean?
Well, just my 9-year-old son said to me, he should play for Man City. He's the player they need. They should sign Schmeichel.
Well, if your son was old enough, he'd remember that he did play.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, but he's a very good goalie, isn't he? And he probably probably plays the right way as well. His distribution's
rid of him? Was it Mark Hughes? And then was it Ericsson who got rid of him?
It was a long time ago. I can't. But he wasn't the player he is now.
Right.
I think it'd be a really good signing.
Wasn't there always a suggestion he's not quite tall enough? But he's a good player. I mean, Manchester City, I think, are being linked quite heavily with Jordan Pickford at Sunderland. And going by David Moyes' comments before the weekend action about not being able to buy players and not even being able to afford to get anyone in on loan, that would suggest they may well have to sell him in January.
Well, lose Taylor.
Because they don't have very many valuable assets. Him and Lamina Kone are about it.
Okay. Yeah, massive debts, 140 million, and likelihood that players are going to go. So that's a bit of a downer after a fine win. What was it, 1-0 at home to
Watford.
Watford, yeah. Oh, you know what I said?
Watford missed an awful lot of chances, but, you know, it was a good win, but. Yeah, Watford should have put them away long before they scored the winner.
This stat from Mikael Jongsma. This calendar year, Patrick Van Aanholt has scored as many league goals as Daniel Sturridge, Arjen Robben and Henrik Mkhitaryan. Wow. Sadly not put together. That would be great if it was put together. But, you know, still a match or two left before the 2016 finishes. Right, anyway, that's Sunderland and they are rummages for paper. Are they still in the bottom three? Yeah, just. But they're only a point behind Palace. At the bottom, it's Hull. How unlucky were they? Really,
very unlucky.
Yeah. A, because none of their chances went in. And they hit the frame, I think, three times. And then what was that penalty on Huddleston? That was never a penalty, was it? That enabled Mark Noble to score the winning goal. He puts a hand in kind of...
I thought it was, Antonio.
Did you think it was? Yeah. Morally, I thought there was no way there was a... Morally, they didn't deserve to give a penalty at that point.
But as one of their players, I can't remember who it was, a Scottish chap, not Snodgrass, but interviewed afterwards anyway. He said, if we continue to play like that, we will win games. And he probably has a point. I'm just not so sure Hull will continue to play like that.
Right.
Because it seemed to be an exceptional performance by their standards and West Ham were awful again.
Right. They need three teams to be worser than they are. Swansea would probably be good candidates. They're just coming off a 3-0 defeat away at Middlesbrough. Two goals from Negredo.
Yeah, he's really sparked into life ever since I said that he should be dropped. I think he's scored at least four goals since then.
Mm.
But that's the fourth time in five games that Swansea have conceded three or more goals.
That's a worrying stat.
Since Bob Bradley took charge, they've conceded 25 goals in 10 games.
Wow. 25 in 10. Mm. Right. Well, they're at home to West Ham next, so that figure might creep down a bit, you'd hope.
He seems nice, Bob Bradley, doesn't he? But it's only going one way, isn't it?
It was interesting that you hear, Barney, with your fresh take on a lot of the hot topics in football, because Bob Bradley and his very Americanness was a bit of a litmus test for where you stood, you know, in the football appreciating spectrum. Some people saying he shouldn't have been given the job. Other people saying, yes, he should, because he's had loads of goals. Here's listener Los Shakers saying, yeah, he's been managing for 18 years. He's been involved in club football half that time. Most of the experience came in the early days of MLS where the standard was really poor. His other two club seasons have been mid-table finish in Norwegian top division and a fourth place finish in Ligue 2 with Le Havre. Yeah, put like that. His question in anyway is how on earth someone with that record gets hired for a difficult job and why didn't they keep...
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea why anyone would think he was a better bet than Gary Monk. To manage that club.
Or Gwydlin, who he took over from.
Well, yeah, I know, but this is where we are and then where we came from. It seems a bit odd. I mean, he speaks English, seems to be one thing.
But is it his fault? Could anyone get a tune out of that side?
Well, you have to act quickly, make some, you know, clear decisions that make the team improve.
Yeah, like not sell off your striker.
He's not doing that.
Right, okay. Well,
I think the loss of Ashley Williams to that team has been absolutely huge. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence they're shipping all those goals in his absence since he went to Everton. And, there doesn't seem to be any leaders in that team.
Yeah, I mean, you could say one thing for Bradley in the end, he has inherited a team to which he is not able to... He hasn't been able to do anything because of the transfer window. So perhaps you want to give him some time to do that. But
Time and money.
I would be concerned about the fact that they're continuing to let in so many goals, though. You would expect him to at least address that and do something about it.
Fair point. Might be a good place to start. Let's have a look at one or two other messages from the listeners. David Cleary says, what's your pick for must-read football book of the year? Barney, have you got anything out we should mention at this point?
No, Jonathan Wilson's book on...
Angels with Dirty Dishes.
Yeah, obviously a pretty decent read.
Yeah.
Incredible degree of...
Is that what it says on the thing? Obviously a pretty decent read.
Research. I think I'd start with that one.
Okay, all right. The David Squires book, which I haven't opened yet because it's for Christmas, but the bits I've seen, pretty funny. Pretty funny.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got pictures and stuff and none of that tactical stuff.
So much. None of that Wilson research stuff.
Yeah. Paolo?
I was just checking. I think it actually came out last year, but the one which I've been reading recently and enjoying, Living on the Volcano.
Ah, and you're a big fan of that as well, aren't you?
Yeah, man? I really enjoyed that.
That's by Mike Calvin, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all about being a manager in the crazy world of the Premier League.
Yeah, and he got great access to a lot of interesting people.
Right, there you go.
And Alan Pardew.
I'm reading a football book at the moment. It's Man in the Middle by top former referee Howard Webb. I don't read many. I should read more football books.
Well, what's it like?
Oh, well, it's eye-opening in many ways.
Is he in character as Howard Webb? Is he
talking? No, you'll be surprised.
No, is it candid? It's candid.
It's reasonably candid, although, you know, as far as I haven't got all the way through yet.
It's not just all about decisions and stuff.
No, although there is some stuff about decisions, a lot of which he gets right, which is comforting.
Naturally, he has the last laugh.
It is interesting. And it is interesting because, like goalkeepers, referees, as indeed Arsene Wenger's comments today about them being kept in cages like lions, there's just a level of misunderstanding about their true nature. Many of them have, you know, ordinary lives and ordinary families. And
all of them.
No.
The thing about referees I've never understood is why?
Yeah, referees.
Why?
Why did you?
Why would
My
you?
Son plays ice hockey, and there are actual ice hockey referees, people who go around in the zebra things, you know, in the UK. And I'm touched that there are. I think it's fantastic.
Well, ice hockey referees are frequently injured, aren't they? They get hit by the puck constantly.
I mean, not so much in the the junior league, but
it's very hazardous. You have to be incredibly
really
brave.
Hazardous. Yeah. Anyway, referees, we salute you. Here's James Rainbow. This is important. Woe podders, go easy on Bournemouth. Apparently the average age has come way down. They're on the national average now. In other corrections news, Mr. Spinalzo, he claims that Hasenhüttl, which is the name Ralph Hasenhüttl, the manager of Leipzig, it does mean rabbit hutch, where it actually translates literally as little hare hut. I could live there because I've got little hair. By the way, speaking of Leipzig, it's an English evoque in the Bundesliga, meaning they've got a full round of midweek fixtures. And that's what they think we do in England, so they call it an English week. And it happens to feature Game of Games, the two teams that are level on points atop the Bundesliga, serial champions Bayern Munich, and a team that had never been in the top flight before, RB Leipzig. That's a huge game. It's on Wednesday night. You can see it in the usual place. Huh. Producer Ben says Rafa's going to be here on Thursday, Raphael Honigstein, to tell us about what happens in the big Leipzig-Bayern or Bayern-Leipzig clash. Oh, Malcolm D says, may I ask you not to use the when you censor Barry or indeed any of you. I was listening while driving through a crossroads or a four-way intersection, as we say over here, and the car horn sound scared the living out of me. Okay, Paolo, we had a top-of-the-table clash in Serie A on Saturday night, and we'll be hearing about that and Sid Lowe on the World Clubs Cup and other stuff after this.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Hello.
It's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, how are you? Feliz Navidad, Sid.
And to you. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good. We haven't spoken in ages. You've had a busy weekend, I imagine, what with action in Japan and some pretty amazing action in Spain as well. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Real Madrid's 4-2 win over Kashima Antlers?
Well, we could start there if you want, although I must admit I'm not especially moved by the World Club Championships. I mean, it's a brilliant end for a great year, particularly for Zidane, obviously, because, you know, this is a guy that took over in January last year. I love this particular stat. I think you'll quite like this, Jimbo. Zidane has now more trophies than he's lost games.
Wow, okay.
In his first year in charge at Real Madrid.
You were cutting out a bit there, so let me just repeat that. He's won more trophies than he's lost games.
Yeah, so he's won three trophies and lost two games as Real Madrid.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. They almost lost that game, though, didn't they?
I think they were just completely taken aback. I think nobody thought that they were playing against a decent side. Nobody thought there was any chance whatsoever of anything other than a really, really comfortable victory. And yeah, they very nearly were caught out. Obviously, there's a penalty that leads to them, that enables them to win. There's a red card not given to Sergio Ramos. There's a header against the bar. And it was a lot harder than anyone expected, that's for sure.
Carson, because the World Club Championship in its various iterations is something that actually when Milan were competing, they took it very, very seriously. And it was something that to Berlusconi in particular was a big point of honour. Is it treated like that by Madrid, by the Spanish press in general, or is it treated something lesser?
Yeah, so I mean, in a way, this says more about the Spanish media than it does about the World Club Championships. But it does also kind of help to underline the fact that this is a trophy that's given a certain significance, but it kind of depends on who and when. So, for example, last year when Barcelona were in it, ABC, which is a kind of a very weird newspaper for all sorts of reasons, but ABC ran a headline that I think said something like, Barcelona reached the final of this pointless competition. This year, Real Madrid win it, and of course, it's Real Madrid champions of the world. And the same happens from the other side. So in Catalonia, it doesn't matter this year. But funnily enough, it did matter last year. I mean, fundamentally, it's just a way of kind of rounding off the year, isn't it? And in a way, the European teams are kind of on a hiding to nothing, aren't they? If they win it, it's just like, well, yeah, you were supposed to win it. Mm. If they don't win it, then it's a complete disaster. And it's really just a way of kind of rounding off the year. That said, I think because of the fact that it feeds into great year for Cristiano Ronaldo on a personal level, just winning the Ballon d'Or, a great year for Zidane, it's helped to kind of complete the circle, if you like.
All right. Yeah, hat-trick for Ronaldo once again. I think it's that his 30th since joining Real Madrid.
I think it might be his 40th in his entire career. I mean, wow. It's absolutely mental, isn't it?
Yeah. Of course, in Catalonia, they had a big game of their own on Sunday in the Barcelona derby, no? A 4-1 victory for Barcelona. If you had to pick one or two moments out of that, Sid, I imagine you would start with that extraordinary, none more Messi, that peak Leo moment when he basically drifts by or weaves his way around four players and then gets surrounded by another four and still manages to get a shot off.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. There's a lovely bit at the end, and Kike Sanchez Flores go onto the pitch and have a word with Leo Messi, and he's asked afterwards what he said, and he said, well, I basically just went to congratulate him on his humility, because this is a guy, and bear in mind, this is a guy, Messi has just played against Kike Sanchez Flores' own team. He says, this is a guy who gets pushed, who gets kicked, who gets put on the ground, and just keeps on going. And he said, and him and Andres Iniesta bring real beauty to football. And Messi yesterday and Iniesta as well were extraordinary. And the moment that you're talking about is that goal that Luis Suarez scores. But there's a moment when Iniesta is surrounded by four players and somehow wriggles his way through it, gives the ball to Messi, who then seems to be surrounded by about 600 players and somehow finds a way through him. You know, he could dribble around players in a phone box, and he's there in front of the goal. And then, unfortunately, the shot's not that good. It's a toe poke, which the goalkeeper saves. Of course, then Suarez finishes up with the rebound. And it just feels like such a pity that Messi himself didn't score. But he was absolutely brilliant again yesterday. Mm. And doing things that... You know, the thing about Messi is he's made it so routine, and half the time I feel like we don't actually talk about him enough. But then every now and again, even by his own standards, he does something and you just think, God, this is just incredible.
Yeah, I think that would make his kind of top Messi moments ever, I think, no? That.
Yeah, and it's just a pity that it wasn't him that kind of finished it off. Yeah. But it is ridiculous. When you watch it, it's one of those as well, you watch it and it's amazing him coming through this kind of crowd of players. But then you watch it again in slow motion, and every single movement is superb as well. So he goes inside a couple of times on the outside of his left foot. And on each of the occasions, the movement is so sharp that the defence are really close to him, but they can't stop him. Then he cuts back the other way. And again, the movement is so sharp and the ball is so close to him that the defenders don't have a hope in hell of getting near him.
What's going on with Sevilla? Because I know they were challenging at the top. And what's the reaction to them drawing Leicester? Was there kind of wild partying in the streets of the Andalusian city?
No, not really. I mean, they this weekend, by the way, they scored four goals in 10 minutes. They were absolutely brilliant for this period when they just kind of bursting their way through against Malaga. Juan de Ramos, of course, former Sevilla manager. The reaction, I think, to the Leicester draw is The context again, and I hate to say this, I sort of feel like I always do, and apologies for doing so. The context again is kind of the reaction is that this is a country dominated by Madrid and Barcelona. So Leicester was the team that people wanted for Madrid because they felt that of the teams that Madrid could get, they might have been the weakest. Now, when Sevilla get them, obviously then there's a sense of, yeah, this isn't so bad. Leicester are not that amazing. But of course, the context changes. It's no longer Real Madrid. I think there is a sense here that all four Spanish teams are probably favourites to get through. Leicester could be problematic, but there is an awareness of English football here, and people do watch a lot of Premier League football here, and they've seen what's happened to the Leicester this season. And while I think they're still treated as a side that could be difficult, that on the counter-attack in particular can cause problems, I think there is a sense as well that they know, as everyone in England, of course, knows, is that it's not the same team anymore.
Right. Sid, the January transfer window is almost upon us. I'm not sure which clubs are banned these days or not, but they did
I
have
feel like that sometimes as well. Yeah.
Anything big happening apart from obviously Glenn Johnson going to the Camp Nou?
I'd love Glenn Johnson to come to Spain. That would be so much fun. I don't think it's going to happen. The one really big thing, Jimbo, is comes out of Japan as well, with Real Madrid winning the World Club Championships. James Rodriguez in the mix zone after the game. Asked if he can be sure that he's going to stay at Real Madrid after January, and he said, "I can't promise you that. I can't tell you that for sure. I don't know." He says, "I want to play more. This is the place where I want to be. This is the city I want to be in. It's the club I want to be at. But I can't assure you that I'm going to still be here because I want to play." And of course, he's a good enough player, and Madrid are keen enough, I think, to get rid of him. But if a really good offer came in, or if the right package was put together, perhaps a loan for now with a guaranteed big money transfer in the summer, then I suspect Madrid would take it. Although Zidane has said on numerous occasions, "I don't want him to go."
Right. Well, of course, Madrid has a long history of exporting James to England. Anyway, Sid, on that note, many best wishes for the Christmas period.
And
looking to the Feliz Año Nuevo that's going to be heading along straight afterwards.
Well, it can't be much worse than 2016,
well,
can it?
Don't say that, because you know what it could.
Because it can be, yeah.
It really could. Also, because I think I'm right in saying a lot of the bad things, or things that not everyone's happy with, that initiated in 2016 actually take real concrete effect next year.
Yes,
so
that's probably
that.
True.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, we'll move on. Sid, thank you ever so much. Have a great one.
My pleasure, and you. Cheerio.
Dr. Sid in Spain. Hey, Paolo, I don't know what you make of his assertion that Real Madrid are going to breeze past Napoli without so much as a sideways glance.
I think it's going to be a really fun two-legged tie. I think it's going to be interesting. I think the fact that the second leg is in Naples with the Stadio San Paolo could make it, if they can make that first leg close, could make it a very interesting second leg indeed.
Right. Especially since they've got the new Maradona there, a new Maradona by the name of Diego Armando Mertens. Was it Corriere dello Sport saying that this morning?
I think that was. And another paper was calling him Dries Gonzalo Mertens because he's replaced Gonzalo Higuain. Apparently, we have to give him a new name to understand that he's very good at football.
Right. Well, Barney's not impressed by his hat-trick.
A 9-minute hat-trick.
Well, it's good that he scored those quite simple goals all within the space of
back-to-back hat-tricks.
Nine minutes. Yeah. No, I'm sure he's excellent and it was a good hat-trick, but there seemed to be an incredible froth, as there often is, on social media about his goals, which I eagerly...
The fourth goal. Did you like the fourth goal? Where he's being shepherded away from goal, and while running, he turns and produces and improvises this lob over the keeper.
Improvised lob.
What's wrong with an improvised lob?
Well, it was I score goals like that in five-a-side quite a lot, where you slightly get
you're not playing professional
the wrong bit of your toe and it flies in.
It's a big claim from Barney Ronnie that he scores goals like that quite often. I would, I'm going to have to start coming out and checking out your
five-a-side. He's got a talented football family. You know,
that's
what
true.
On that.
Well, he's the first person to score consecutive hat tricks in Serie A for more than two decades, so I think it's quite impressive. Napoli are scoring hatsfuls of goals at the moment, more than they did with Higuain last season, which is, given that they are a team without a striker, is impressive. They're not defending especially well. It was a bit of a wonky game in the end, 5-3, but they are back in the mix for, at the very least, the Champions League conversation, and if Juventus ever do stumble, they're as close to them as... Well, they're only 1 point further away from them now than Roma are, because... That was the other big thing that happened this weekend.
Saturday night, Juve hosted Roma. Roma could move to within 1 point of Juve, but the opposite happened. They ended up 7 points back.
Yeah, it was sort of billed as the big chance to open it all up again. And Roma had been playing, actually they hadn't been playing that well, but they've been getting really good, impressive results. They've been missing Mohamed Salah, but without him, they just ground out a win over Lazio, a win over Milan. These are the other teams that were there in second. Well, Milan were joint with them on second. Lazio were a point behind when they played them. And we thought we were going to see a real battle, and it just never materialised. Gonzalo Higuain, at the beginning of the game, did what £90 million strikers should do, took things into his own hands, bulldozed through De Rossi, left him on the floor, skipped past the defender and drilled a really nice finish into the bottom corner. And he has now done that in their big games pretty consistently in Serie A. He did it against Napoli, scored the winner. He did it against Torino in the derby. He did it against Fiorentina, who are not playing that well, but that was being the season and one of Juventus' traditional rivals. Yeah. So... the disappointing thing was that after that was the 14th minute, we didn't really see anything from Roma. After all this hype, after all this discussion that this could be the time that they push on and challenge them, Roma didn't show up in any big way. And that is indeed, unfortunately, in keeping with two trends, one of which is that they have not won away to Juventus since the stadium was built. They've lost, in fact, every game they've played there since the stadium was built by an aggregate score, I think, seven games of an aggregate score of 19-3. And another trend, Luciano Spalletti has managed against Juventus 22 times in his career.
Yep.
Different clubs, obviously, and has beaten them in that time only once.
Wow.
Drawn three and lost the other 18.
Some remarkable figures there. Anything else from your Italian roundup today, Paolo? Any quirky Italian stuff there?
My favourite quirky note of the weekend was Papu Gomez's amazing captain's armband. I mean, he's been doing this all season. People haven't picked up on it as much, that Papu Gomez has had some colourful and lively captain's armbands, but he had one this weekend which had a picture of PlayStation on it and the was it the Masters 11 from Pro Master Evolution 11. Soccer.
Yeah, I don't know what the Master 11 was, but a lot of people went, oh my God, that's the Master 11.
Yeah, so a little bit of retro gaming nod. I'd be honest with you, I don't particularly know
so
the Master 11.
He's just basically given carte blanche to put whatever he wants on his armband, is he? As long as it's not a poppy, I hope.
He's been doing colourful things all season, of which I now can't think of any. But if you give me a second, I'll look some up, because they have. But this is not his first of the year. Right. He's had some very...
Well, while you're looking that up, we'll just mention that, shock drama Sunday night in France, Barry, where Monaco hosted Lyon. Monaco, the highest scoring team in the top five. I think they scored 53 goals in 17 games. And they went and lost at home to Lyon 3-1, which leaves Nice 4 points clear. Nice, who'd won earlier in the day, with a couple of goals from Mario Balotelli.
PSG lost again.
They did.
Which is, they've now lost twice as many games in this campaign as they did in the entirety of the last one.
Well, you know what? They've lost four in this campaign, and if you put the last two seasons together, they only lost five across two campaigns. So, yeah, and as a result, there is word now that Unai Emery might be replaced by, today's rumour is, Louis van Gaal before the big clash with the Barcelona rolls round in February. Bonnie.
Well, I mean, what people say about PSG is there's a problem there with player power, superstar players. You do wonder how chucking the combustible van Gaal, it would be fun.
That would be fun.
But you have to say, I mean, if Nice can keep...
It wouldn't be fun, sorry, for Angel Di Maria, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'd be reunited with his old chum.
Although he's one of the ones who everyone says is least, you know, it seems to be fitting in least well with Unai Emery. It was Ibra who was the big player power guy there, kind of declaring arbitrarily press silences, changing the menu, parking his car where he wanted because he's Ibra, often in front of the gates to make a point.
But if Nice can keep this going. I mean, to win the league ahead of PSG in that league is a fantastic...
Yeah, and Monaco.
You remember when Balotelli went there? There was also... Was it Jamie Carragher saying, oh, I'll see him when he wins the Ballon d'Or, you know, and sort of mocking him slightly. Well, if he can score goals and that team wins the league ahead of PSG, it might be a decent shout to at least get a mention there. I mean, that's a hell of an achievement.
Absolutely. How are you doing with your research?
Yeah, I can tell you a few of them. On Mother's Day, he had a picture of his mum, sister and wife on his armband. On Halloween, he had a really natty, like, I mean, you don't wrap things up for Halloween, but if Halloween had a wrapping paper, it's what Halloween wrapping paper would look like theme.
Was it like pumpkins?
It was all orange and sort of spooky stuff on it, ghosts and things in black. Then he had a comic strip from... it's called Holly and Benji in Italy, but apparently the initial name is Captain Tsubasa, which is a Japanese manga cartoon about football.
Do you think he's disrespecting the office of captain? Yeah. But does John Terry have comedy?
Well, you know how obsessed English media get about who wears the armband.
Exactly.
They wouldn't stand for this desecration.
Yeah.
But yeah. Atalanta are, you know, a happy success story of the season.
So yeah, they are. They were, aren't they?
They drew with Milan this weekend and they are sixth.
Huh. Wow. Well, that brings us to the end, you know, of today's Football Weekly. We've got another one on the way on Thursday and then Christmas, everybody. Wow. Exciting. So thanks, producer Ben. Thank you for struggling in, Barney. Always great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Paolo Bandini, fantastic work there.
Merry Christmas.
And solid as ever, Barry.
Cheers, Jimbo. Merry Christmas. I won't be here on Thursday.
Are you going to be here on Thursday?
Merry Christmas. To Merry Christmas.
Yeah,
And a slightly less miserable New Year.
Fingers crossed. We'll catch up with you Thursday anyway. Listeners, have a nice sleep till then.